the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
That's right. Welcome back. It is it's the Thursday edition of the Bucket Strategy Investing program. Just winging our way right through the week. We are taking your money questions. I'm Johnny Dean, hosting here along with Professor Rick Plum, certified financial planner. Rick joins me once again from Lucia Capital Group. We're going to be talking about a lot of things, of course. The main topic for the first, segment or two will deal with something that you may be doing yourself. And it's probably not a good thing. And I'm referring to a process called reverse dollar cost averaging. We didn't get a chance to talk about this a couple of weeks ago because we had too many calls, so we're talking about it today. You may know what dollar cost averaging is, right? How it could help you to build your portfolio over the years. But doing the reverse of that, and that is taking money out of a declining portfolio, that can cause some serious harm to your savings. So we're going to tell you what it's all about. We'll offer maybe some potential solutions coming up in just a moment with Professor Rick Plum. You can get in touch with us right now, get all the answers to your money questions taken care of. Take advantage of the Brain Trust while you have the chance. Our number, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. Emails, you go over to wealthed.com at the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. Professor Rick Plum, I said this, he's here courtesy of the folks at Lucia Capital Group, certified financial planner. And guess what? You need to get a strategy. You need one that addresses your needs and your goals, one that aims to anticipate what might go wrong, and one that can provide you, perhaps with some degree of relative safety, during the all-important, what we call the distribution phase of retirement, like we talked about yesterday. You can call our advisory team at Lucia Capital Group at this number, 800-644-1150. You can talk to any of them about your financial future and get your bucket strategy put together. That's the off-air number, 800-644-1150. Once again, on the air, 877-PLANNER. We got some room on the phones for you to talk about whatever is on your mind, 877-752-6637. Kind of had a little bit of this discussion yesterday, Professor Plum, but I know a lot of people that are listening and watching right now didn't hear it because it was at a different time. But we mentioned something called dollar cost averaging. Let's explain what this is first of all.
Well, dollar cost averaging is a systematic savings approach where you're putting in, it's what you do with your 401k. It's what you do if you have some type of automatic savings plan where you're going into some type of an investment, whether it be a mutual fund, a stock, whatever. Dividend reinvestment plans are basically a form of dollar cost averaging. So what it is where you're using a systematic set dollar amount going into the investment at a systematic periodic time frame. Once a month, once a paycheck, whatever the case is. But it goes in, and you don't look at what the price of the security that it's purchasing. You just put in. If it's $100 a month, you're putting in your $100 a month. If it's $10,000 a month, you're putting in $10,000 a month. But what happens is that with volatility that the market does bring us, and that's one of the few things that we can be pretty sure of in the stock market and other areas, is volatility. If I'm putting in that set dollar amount, when the market goes down or the price of that security goes down due to volatility, we get to buy more shares. If it's less expensive per unit, the same dollar amount's going to buy more units. And then when it goes up in value or up in price because of volatility pushing it up, you don't buy as many shares. So that $100, that $5,000, whatever the number is, buys more shares at the lower price than it buys at the higher price, hence giving the average price a lower entry point. So you're averaging your transaction down to a lower cost. Now, dollar cost averaging doesn't guarantee a return. It will just potentially help you over time get a better rate of return if we have volatility and if the market does come back to at least some point, you know, near where we started. If we look at the lost decade, I mean, everybody talks about the lost decade as being a horrible time to be an investor.
Yeah, when was that? Let's remind
people.
From
2000, the beginning of 2000 to the end of 2009, where the market started. That was just before the tech bubble burst. And then 2009 was just after the bottom of the Great Recession, you know, downturn. So what happened, the reason they call it the lost decade is because the S&P was at X number at the beginning of that time horizon, January 1st. And it was about the same number on the index 10 years later. But if you had been dollar cost averaging, if you were using your 401k and other things to invest into a diversified portfolio at that time. You watched the market go down. You kept investing. You watched it recover in 2004, 5, 6. You kept investing. You watched it crash in 2008. You kept investing. And then it came back to basically its starting point. But you didn't just make nothing over that period of time, because all those shares that you purchased in the crash were now worth quite a bit more.
And
even
way,
though some of the shares that you purchased towards the high point were just about breaking even, there's a lot of shares at
the
low
it.
Point
yes.
that were doing very, very well. And so that's what we look at when it comes to dollar cost averaging. And it is a very effective way to, over time, help yourself reduce the volatility in your portfolio, even though there's a significant amount of volatility in the market.
It helps you what? Take advantage of the volatility.
It's the
right?
one thing that lets yeah. us take advantage of the volatility. And that's why when you are in accumulation, when you are in accumulation mode, you want to stay with the new monies going into the portfolio into the more volatile areas. And that's one of the reasons I don't like using just one target date fund. You know, like if I'm going to retire in 5 years, I don't want to use just a 2020 fund for the entire portfolio, because while that makes sense for some of the money, the new money that I'm contributing every month on my, or every paycheck on my 401k or whatever it is, should be going into something more volatile. It shouldn't be going into something super safe. I don't get any advantage for that. The only time I want to save into something safe is when I don't have any other money available and I have a need that's going to be coming up in a year or two or three. That, okay, needs to be very safe, because now I'm more worried about losing yeah. what I'm putting in than I am growing it over a longer period of time.
Yeah, it's a good point. Inside of your 401k, which is a nice example of how dollar cost averaging works, some people do have allocations of more aggressive money, safer money perhaps.
Safen up existing capital, because once we have existing capital, we don't want the market to take that away from us, because it's not helping us if we lose yes. in that area. Where the downturn in the market, a 25-year-old's outlook on the stock market is very different than a 65-year-old's outlook on the market. The 25-year-old who doesn't have anything in the market wants to see it go down in value so that they can keep buying in over the next 20 years and then have it recover.
Yeah.
65-year-old does not want that to happen, because they don't want to see their portfolio go down. The only way to avoid the volatility in that respect with existing money is to not play the game of volatility with existing money. Move it to a safer area.
And that's not all the existing money. It's a portion.
The yeah. money that is a shorter or moderate term existing mm-hmm. money. Now, you may be saying, well, I'm 65, I'm 66, I'm going to retire in another, or I'm 60 years old, I'm going to retire at 66, I'm going to retire in 6 years. I shouldn't be dollar cost averaging into the market. Yeah, you should. Unless you can tell me you're single, you're terminal, and you're going to die at 70, you have time for at least some of the money in the portfolio to recover. So continuing to dollar cost average in that side of the equation, that side of the volatility makes sense. As long as you've got enough money in the safer areas to provide for your income needs, your distribution needs, for the first 10 years or so of retirement. Now you've got time for those crazy movements that the market does have to help you.
Yeah, 877-PLANNER, by the way, is our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. You by avoiding putting money into, say, a safer part, let's just take a 401k, because that's where most people dollar cost average. By avoiding putting new money into that safer section of your 401k, you're allowing that new money I hate to use the term biggest bang for the buck, but that's almost what it is.
Well, it's trying to take advantage of the one thing that we know the market's going to give us, volatility. We have no idea whether it's going to be positive or negative. We just know that it's going to be different tomorrow than it is today. It's either going to be higher or it's going to be lower. Next month, same thing. It's going to be higher, it's going to be lower. Over time, it tends to be higher. But to get to point A, from point A to point B, is a very volatile issue. A couple of days, weeks ago, John read a statistic about up and down days in the market so far this year. And it was about, 46 down to 54 up, or something of that nature. And that was the last 100 days. The last 1,000 days was about 46% down, 54% up. The last 10,000 days, I think, was off by a percent.
That's what it was. S&P 500. For the last 100 days, this is from last week, so it's changed maybe a tiny bit. 54 to 46 in favor of the up days. Last 1,000 days, 54 to 46 in favor of the up days. And the last 10,000, 53 to 47.
Yeah, it was off by 1% there.
Yes.
So we know that there's going to be volatility.
That's the one given that we can kind of count on. So how do we take something we can't control, something we don't know how to deal with, something we can't affect, we can't actually predict, other than over a period of time, we know that it's going to be volatile. And over 10, 15 plus time horizons, so far in history, it's been positive. We just need to use it to our advantage. So dollar cost averaging helps us in the accumulation mode. Unfortunately, a lot of advisors and a lot of individuals take everything they know about accumulation, asset allocation, rebalancing, dollar cost averaging, and then just apply that same terminology and technology to the distribution mode. Well, maybe it doesn't work the same way when you reverse the direction.
I'll tell you, it doesn't work the same way. In fact, it can really hurt you by doing exactly that. So we'll talk about that. That's the reverse of dollar cost averaging. Anything else that's on your mind, you give us a call, 877-PLANNER. Lines open. We'll take your phone calls when we come back on Buckett Strategy Invest. Hey, we got some room on the phone. You give us a call, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. That's what we do on the show. It's what we do for a living, really. We plan. We help you plan, and we hope you can have a more successful retirement, a more successful financial future. And we talk about wealth education on the show. It's exactly what we do. We try that anyway. We try to do that every day on this program. Talking to you about different aspects of money, 877-752-6637. Emails at our website, wealthed.com. So, okay, that was a perfect little segue, Professor Plum, right before the break. We were talking about dollar cost averaging, how it helps. You have volatility. You keep putting in, and I'm not going to say it's a blanket statement for everybody, but for the most part, you keep putting the money in. You have a well-diversified 401k or whatever you're putting it into. You can use the volatility of the market to your advantage. Just keeps you going, keeps you buying in. Now, you get to retirement. You get to the time when you got to start taking money out of the 401k. What is the problem with just taking a slice off of everything and living off of that and then just rebalancing that cookie?
Well, that's what everybody's dealt with for many, many years. They talk about changing your allocation and changing it to a more conservative allocation or using a balanced portfolio and then taking a distribution from that portfolio and then rebalancing because you want to stay in balance, right? And that's where we have a lot of discussion on where it used to be a 6% rule, came into a 4.5% rule. Now it's just been called the 4% rule. And a lot of researchers in the last several years, led by the American College in many respects, Wade Fow being one of the biggest voices in this research, saying the 4% rule doesn't work. And the problem is that if we look at historical returns and try to equate them to future returns, we may not have the same historical, future returns as we had in the past. We're definitely not going to, for the next 20, 30 years, not going to have the same bond returns that we've had out of the bond portfolios for the last 10, 20, 30 years. The stock market is not expected to have the same growth, at least not domestically, as we had from, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and 80s. And so they're trying to revise the idea of how much can you actually take out of a portfolio. And what they're talking about is with a 60-40 stock bond or bond stock mix, that instead of taking 4% out, you should only be taking, and with the 4% rule, there was like a 95% certainty based on historical Monte Carlo simulations, you would never run out of money over 30 years. 95% certainty. Now they're saying that for a 95% certainty, you'd have to drop your distribution rate to roughly 1.93%. That means if you have a $1 million portfolio, when you retire at 65, if you want to make sure that the money lasts for 30 years, you should only be taking out $19,300 a year from that portfolio. That's kind of dismal. And to get a 90% certainty, according to the research that they're doing, it would only be 2.2% distribution, $22,000 off of $1 million.
So from $19,000, you give yourself an extra couple of grand a year, and you've, according to them, lowered your probability of lasting by another 5%.
Right. And so, but one of the things that they just continue to not take into consideration is that if you are taking a systematic distribution from a portfolio and continually rebalancing it, you are at times selling something when it's lower. How do you make money in the stock market? You buy low and sell high. It's not that you buy at level A and you sell at lower than that. You don't buy high and sell low. You don't sell, if possible, just because of market conditions being off. Unfortunately, the sequence of returns, meaning what you run into right after retirement, is a huge dictating factor on how your portfolio will do for the rest of your life. If you retire with a systematic withdrawal like this at a good time, where the next 5, 6, 7 years are very good years, then you're probably going to be okay. However, if you retire in 2000 and do this type of a distribution system, 2006, 7, 8, do this type of distribution, you have no control over what's going to happen. We've talked about that before. But if you retire into a bad sequence of returns, your portfolio, if you're selling when it's down, your portfolio may never recover. And that's what the reverse dollar cost averaging is doing. What they're doing is they're taking a systematic distribution. Unlike the dollar cost averaging idea, where we were taking a systematic contribution and using that to our advantage, when we turn it around the other way and we start taking a systematic distribution from something that has any amount of volatility, we run the risk of selling something when it's down to be able to create the same amount of income each month. Most of us need a specific amount of income each month when we retire. And one of the comments that Dr. Pfau made in his research was, and I'll just read, by drawing out less when the portfolio suffers a loss, you'll be able to sustain, create a longer lifetime for that portfolio. Now, his co-researcher, Mr. Wade Dockin, said, well, wait a minute. I don't think that's a practical idea. Most people don't like to take less in income just because the market went down.
That's
and
ridiculous.
I happen to agree with him.
That's ridiculous. It's the whole reason we talk about buckets, too, by the way.
So reverse dollar cost averaging is the systematic distribution from a portfolio that has volatility. Now, if the market is up, that's going to work just fine, because when the market's up, you don't have to sell as many shares to be able to create the specific dollar amount that you're trying to get. But when the market is down, you have to sell more shares. And when you sell those shares, they can't recover because they're no longer there. So reverse dollar cost averaging is a good way to screw up a portfolio in retirement. So the only way to really try to safeguard at least portions of your portfolio is to find a way to avoid selling when the market is down. Now, I'm not talking about an individual security, because individual securities, can go down or up based on their own technical issues, and sometimes they can go down and go out of business. We're talking about the market and market conditions in this particular area. You know, we saw that the S&P 500 in 2015, there were 20 or 30 stocks that were up more than 25%, and that was in a bad year, but that's a very small sliver of that pie too. So we're talking about a diversified portfolio overall, and watching market conditions and looking at it, the goal is to not have to sell something in retirement to create the income that you need, the distribution that you need, when the market is lower. But the only problem is you can't predict. Nobody can predict when the market is going to be lower. We've had people predicting that the market was going to go lower since 2011. There were really strong voices in 2012 that the market was going to go lower. And then after 2013, when the market went up, a very nice return, much better than expected, we actually didn't hear those people that much anymore. They were actually talking about buying into the market now. Same ones that said sell in 2012 were talking about buying in 2013. That's ridiculous. When the market will do what the market does, whether you think that it's going to go up or down. So you've got to find a way to create your portfolio for a retirement distribution or education distribution or whatever your distribution plan is that is bigger than your ability to predict whether you're going to go into a declining market or an increasing market. Obviously, if we knew for a fact that the market was going to move lower for the next 3 years, we'd take all of our money out of the market, right? But we don't know that. And so that's where reverse dollar cost averaging will tend to screw up your portfolio faster than anything else.
So if you're saying that all the whole 1.9% and the whole thing is reverse dollar cost averaging is a rotten way to go, that's a bad thing to do. There is a potential solution to that.
There is.
Wow. All right. Well, why don't we just talk briefly about it when we come back?
I think that would go over well.
I think so, too. It's amazing how this all times out perfectly. Talk to us about your money. You've got questions on this or anything else. Lines are open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R.
Bucket Strategy Investing continues right after. This reminds me of the, was it the Social Security show? There you go.
Yes.
Well, I might as well tease that too while we're here. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, I hearken back to, I think this was our theme song.
It was one of the intros, yes.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. So just a reminder that besides this program, there are more programs right here on WealthEd.com. I know a lot of you listen on the radio, but if you go to WealthEd.com, you can find us there too, because we're also live there. Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. We're live with the Social Security Show. We talk Social Security strategies, laws, rules, and take your phone calls and emails as well on that program. So be sure to tune in, and I think you can catch some excerpts of it on certain websites. I don't want to say that it's at WealthEd.com because I haven't seen it, but look it up, the Social Security Show. WealthEd.com. All right, thanks for that. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. We'll get some emails in just a little bit. Also, Professor Plum, you had presented in the first segment a case for dollar cost averaging, all right, which is the systematic contributions.
Taking advantage of volatility.
Yes, regular contributions into something that 401ks work well, 403bs, those retirement plans. And using that to your advantage. We talked the next segment, our last segment, about how doing the reverse of that, taking it out when markets are down, causes you to do what Wade Fowle, who's a fairly smart...
Very smart.
What is he?
I think he might be a PhD, but he's a finance professor for the
American
College. Finance
professor, yeah, who had said, look, you know something, I mean, in order to make... With interest rates where they are right here, right now, and the ability to not generate any safe money, we're going to have to lower our expectation to 1.9% withdrawals per year. Well, that's a lot of garbage.
Well, maybe, and that would be a fairly low distribution from what most people would look at doing. But so one of the ways that you can hopefully try to manage your distribution and avoid the deadly reverse dollar cost averaging is to find a way to avoid selling something when it's down. Now, proponents of the 4% rule just say, well, just don't take any money out of your portfolio if it's down until it recovers, and then you can start taking money out again. That's as bad as just taking less, as Wade Dawkins said. You know, it doesn't make any sense. When you're retired, you want to be able to do what you want to do when you want to do it, not because the market is one way or the other way. And so you have to find a way to avoid selling. Now, some people did that from the very start of their business, you know, or their working years by moving into a position where they got a nice pension. I was speaking with a firefighter friend the other day, and he's got enough pension, and he saved a lot of money. But even if he lost every penny that he saved, he's saving money from his pension, and he's retired. He doesn't really need to worry about taking money out of the market when it's down, because he doesn't need to worry about taking money out of the market ever. He's got the pension. Most of us don't have that luxury. The pension, the money that's coming in guaranteed from some source that doesn't matter about the market. So we have to create our own distribution patterns from our own portfolios, at least to some degree. We have our Social Security potentially, we have some pension maybe, but we don't have enough of those types of income to live off of. So you have to create a distribution strategy from your portfolio. How do you do that? You set enough money aside to make sure that you don't have to sell when the market's down. Now, how much do you have to set aside? That's the big question.
You're saying set aside in a safe...
Set aside in cash, yeah. In lower volatility areas.
Something that is not affected by the volatility of the stock market.
And there's some writers that talk about buckets. There's writers that talk about it on some very large websites, I'm not going to say at the moment. And they talk about having 2 years in a safe account and then the rest of it in varying different volatility accounts. Is that enough? Is 2 years enough to withstand a downturn in the market? Well, it wasn't in 2000. It wasn't in 2007, 2008. Heck, it may not be right now. We have a downturn. We've had a little bit of a downturn going on recently. 2 years is not enough. 5 years, if we look at the S&P 500, you have a 14% chance of loss. And if you live by Murphy's Law, like a lot of people do, that 14% chance is more like a certainty. It takes more than just 5 or 6 years of safer type money to prepare against the potential downturns that the market has. And it takes longer for some of the market downturns to recover than just 2, 3, 4, 5 years. You need more time. So how you go about doing it is setting yourself up with different types of buckets, safe money in the middle, moderate money, or safe money on the one side that you're going to draw down, moderate money in the middle to replace the safe money, and then your long-term growth money for stuff you don't need to spend for 15 years.
Yeah, ideally we like to do the 15 years, so buying yourself time, 15 years can help. We'll talk more about this. I want to take a few more calls, though. 877-PLANNER. Again, any topic you have, any problem money, problem issue you have, we will talk to you about it right here on the program. Let's move along next to Mike in Las Vegas. Hi, Mike.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. I have a question on my life insurance policy. Right now, I have a variable appreciable life insurance policy.
Okay.
I was thinking I was switching to it's called an index universal life policy.
Okay. Why?
Well, I was told that I've had this policy for 27 years. I was told it's costing me approximately 4% annually in fees, and on top of that, insurance costs. And my account is like a roller coaster with values are going up and down every few years. So,
4% sounds high unless you're including the cost of insurance in that. The internal expenses of managing the portfolio wouldn't be 4%. If it is, that is a reason to get the heck out of Dodge.
Right. Do you have any?
Well, I like both of them. I actually, for long term. Now, how old are you now?
I'm 59.
59. And do you need a permanent life insurance policy? What is the purpose for this policy?
Probably to take care of either my wife or my kids after, I guess.
After you're gone.
Right.
So what you should be looking for is not a huge cash value policy, but something, the cheapest policy you can get to provide the death benefit that you want.
Okay.
And so I would look at not an IUL, an indexed universal life. I would look at what's known as a GUL, a guaranteed universal life. It's kind of like a long-term term policy. You can get a guaranteed premium that doesn't really build a lot of cash value, mm-hmm. that goes all the way to like 120, age 120 if you want to take it out that long, where as long as you make the premium payment, that death benefit is guaranteed. And what you told me is that you wanted to make sure that there was the death benefit available for your family, that you weren't necessarily looking for it as an income source for you in retirement. Because to put it into an income source for you, you're going to have to pay a lot more money. And paying a lot more money at 59 is not the easiest thing in the world to do, because at some point in the next couple of years, you're probably going to want to retire.
Right, right. I'm considering it right now, yeah. So the index would be
An indexed universal life, similar to a variable life, or variable appreciable, or variable universal life, is a cash value policy. And the idea is to try to grow the cash value to create a lot of cash so that you can maybe have distributions during your lifetime, in addition to covering your death needs.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes money. It takes a lot of money to do it. And
a
so one of the things I might want to look at is how much cash value do I have right now in my current policy? And how much, if I do a 1035 exchange of that lump sum of money, how much death benefit can I buy on a guaranteed basis with no future premiums? Or, if that number is not large enough for what I want it to do, how much do I have to pay each year after moving this cash value into it? And it'll be a fairly low number comparatively to some other policies. You know, index UL works great, but it typically you want to fund the living heck out of it because you want to use it during your life and then to provide a death benefit. You want the death benefit. Get the cheapest death benefit you can find.
All right. So that even for my age, that would be, because I'm still on the fence about as far as whether I need the death benefit or for my benefit.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that you need to talk to somebody about. If you really don't need the death benefit, well, if you really don't need the death benefit, then what you do is you, the first part of what I talked about, look at the cash value. See what kind of a death benefit it buys just as a one-time thing, and you walk away from it, you never deal with it again. And you got the death benefit there, and you don't have a payment. So that works.
Okay. All right. Great.
Okay.
I appreciate your help.
Okay. Let us know. We can refer you to people that can do the background work.
Yeah,
on
hold
this.
On a second, Mike. I'll have you talk to who's there? Is it Ara? One of them is right there. Can help you out with this particular type of policy. Now we only got a minute, so we can talk more about this on the other side.
But the policy that they were looking at isn't the problem. IULs could be, indexed universal life can work very, very well in the right circumstance. Variable life can work very well. And I actually happen to like the variable life for a long-term funding need more than I like the IUL. That's my personal opinion. But he said it had 4% in fees, not including the cost of
insurance.
The insurance.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. And that would be a reason to get out of it.
Was that common back? Because he's had this a long time.
Well, if I remember the policy, variable appreciable life had a kind of a whole life feel to it, where it had guarantees in it.
Yeah.
It was kind of a crossover between a straight variable universal and a whole life. And so it might have had fees. I don't know about 4%.
So this is VAL.
VAL, yes.
VAL. Okay, that was before my time. Okay, 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Other questions, comments, concerns? You give us a call. Lines open right now. It is Bucket. That's good. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, talking to you about your money. Having a good time on this program. By the way, there's another hour coming up. We got some folks on hold. We're going to get to everybody, so hang on for more of the best in money information. Okay, we're going to do these in order. Let's get to David up next in Dallas, Texas. Hello, David.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I just want to elaborate on why I think it's more beneficial to take your money at 62 and retire on the Social Security.
Okay.
It's because I did the math on it, and the 4 years that would go by if you went for the later years, like 65 or 67, is you're not going to get that money back until you're like 74, if you make it to 74.
Oh, no, that's very true. There is a definite
break-even
age.
You break even till then, and you lose that money. But when you're 74, then you'll make that little $250 extra.
Uh-huh.
Then you'll make it. But what good is that money if you're dead by then? It's better to get the money in the beginning.
Well, then we've always said that there's a specific break-even age. And reality is it's a little longer than 74. It's actually closer to the early 80s when you consider rates of return, cost of living allowances, and other things involved. So
that's for people now, if they want to work, well, then there you go. You don't have to worry about that because you're
different issue.
Making money.
But, you definitely have to tell me that this benefit is going to last. Now, that benefit will last, if you're the higher wage earner of a married couple, that benefit may last longer than just your life expectancy. So we have to look at both your life and your spouse's life. But that benefit has to last until you're probably 80 years old, or you would have been 80 years old or better, to make it worthwhile waiting. If you can tell me that, no, A, I don't think I'll make it, I don't want to bet that I'm going to make it, or I definitely am not going to make it, don't wait that long. Take it when you retire.
Yeah. A bird in the hand is better than two bush anytime.
There you go.
And there is no guarantee that you will live.
Now, I do have another question regarding this elderly person, and she really doesn't know. She hasn't been putting much money into the system because her husband was working and she didn't work. So when he died and he never got married again, she wants to know, can she get his money? And if she can, for how long when she hits 62, which is coming up?
Well, now, they were married and then divorced. Is that true?
He just died.
Oh, so
they were divorced, but he died.
He died while they were married. He died while they were married.
Yeah.
He left her, but he died unmarried.
So how did they get
on? If he got married again, then she would benefit from him.
His remarriage has nothing to do with anything. What I want to know is, were they married for at least 10 years?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, that's all that matters. And she is still single, yes?
She's still single, yes.
And is she working right now?
She's working, but she just cleans houses, and she barely makes it, and she has to depend on her family for money.
Okay, and so is she making less than, call it, $16,000 a year?
Absolutely. She's just hardly nothing. I'd say
okay, well, then she is eligible for a benefit from her late husband.
Right.
And she could have been receiving it for the last 2 years. She's eligible for a survivor's benefit, widow's benefit, as early as age 60. Now, it's reduced, just like your own benefit's reduced, but as long as she's making less than, call it, $16,000 a year, she is eligible for a survivor benefit from his work record since he passed away and they were married for more than 10 years. Even if they were divorced, anyway, the 10 years will get her a benefit from her ex as long as she's single. So she would want to check into what that benefit will be.
Yeah, it may help her. I tell you what, hey, listen, if you have some more questions, I got to get to one more call, David, before the top of the hour. So hold on. We can talk to you maybe during the top of the hour newscast in just a couple of minutes.
Now, depending on what his benefit is, she may want to take her own first and let his grow until 66 and then take the full widow's benefit at 66.
So if you want to give us that info, maybe we can talk to you more about it during the top of the hour. I do need to get to Joel in Sacramento who's been hanging on. Hello, Joel.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks. Hey, quick question. I'm going to be a beneficiary of a non-qualified variable annuity.
Okay.
And I was kind of concerned about the tax implications or maybe the best way to try to take that inheritance.
Well, how large is the amount of money that you're receiving, and do you know what the basis in the non-qualified annuity is?
I don't know the basis. It's probably about $150,000. I do know there's like the exclusion ratios and stuff like that, but I don't know what the basis is exactly.
Well, typically on a variable annuity, the exclusion ratio doesn't apply. It's just a matter of the exclusion ratio is on a payment, and you're not going to get that going forward. So
It's
whatever the basis was. Let's say they put in $100,000 and it's now worth $150,000. The $50,000 will be taxable. If they put in $20,000 back in 1986 and now it's worth $150,000, well, then $130,000 of it's going to be taxable. There, you can potentially take it out over a couple of years, but it's all going to be taxable. Whatever the amount over the basis is that you're going to receive will be taxable.
Okay, so with my income, maybe it's good to look at if there's like I've heard of like stretch provisions or if there's...
There might be a stretch provision, but it doesn't really... It depends on the company and what you want to do with it. As I mentioned in the last couple of days, there's been a new private letter ruling that the IRS has issued, and a lot of insurance companies, annuity companies, are jumping on it saying, we can do a 1035 exchange and give you a longer payout period to give you some of that stretch capabilities, but... you've got to decide whether or not it even makes sense for you to do so. So typically you can take it out. Typically they're just going to send you a check unless you try to get them to maybe stage it out over 5 years.
All right. Sounds good. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Joel. Yeah, the taxation on those, there's no way really around it. And it can be rather
onerous.
High.
But on the other side, if I were to inherit $150,000, if the basis was zero, I would complain all the way to the bank and,
I
got to pay $40,000 and
you wind up with
110.
100, 110 or whatever after the state. I don't know. To me, it's okay.
I say that out of total jealousy because I'm never inheriting a dime. I mean,
well, no, but it's like looking at the lottery. I would never play the lottery because look at all the taxes I'd have to pay. You know what? I don't know, $400 million and it's taxed down to $300 or $250 million. I'd probably still take it.
$400 taxed down to $300, I'll take it.
Anything you want to send? Is that what we're saying?
But there are ways. The idea now is, how do we lessen the impact? Now, if they're only going to give me $30,000 a year for 5 years, no earnings, but that I'm not sure that's a good idea either.
Yeah, probably not, but we don't have time to get into it. We can talk more about this next hour. We got more coming up. If you want the Brain Trust off the air, you talk to Professor Rick Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Their phone number, 800-644-1150. That's 800-644-1150. You've got questions on any of the things we talk about on this program, ask them about it. Another hour is just ahead. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented,
as the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.